Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting.
And you know, hi, I'm Carol the Coach. That
Carol
is
the Coach.
A tough
Sex,
question.
Love, and relationships.
And that's
we talk
what
about
I'm here to
here.
Tell you about.
Carol the Coach. Compassion.
Here we go.
With
I am Carol the Coach. And just a little technical difficulty right off the bat, but hey, we can handle that. You're listening to Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and I'm here to help you with sexual addiction. And tonight, I'm excited to be interviewing a specialist with kids. You know, so often I work with addicts and or their partners, and they are dealing with their families. And children of sex addicts need to know that they're not alone in their suffering, too. And yet, what do parents do? How do parents make it better for their children? What do they say to them? What do they not say to them? And how do they effectively let their child know that the problems at home are not their fault? In other words, they didn't cause the problem, they can't control it, and they can't cure it. Well, I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Jeff Goodman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. He's a certified sex addiction therapist, just like me, and he's a professor of psychology at Long Island University. And in his 22 years of practice, he's been working with families, specifically the kids, and the addicts and their partners. And he's written a powerful book, a children's book, called Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest. And this book is aimed at parents, therapists, pediatricians, and all sorts of professionals who may be working with children who are struggling in the wake of this addiction. So I am excited to be interviewing him because we don't talk that much about kids. It's hard to know when do you intervene and what do you say. So he's going to be here tonight to talk to you specifically about that. You know, I so oftentimes work with a variety of folks, and what I know to be true is that they want help. They want help to make their life different. They want to do the very best thing they possibly can. They want to work through the lies. They want to get honest. They want to get transparent. And they want to be authentic. And so they fight that addict inside of them that has controlled them for so long. You know, it can be very, very difficult when there's an addict inside encouraging them to do something that they self-loathe. And you know, if you're listening to this show, what that addiction is like. it is a horrible, horrible, horrible affliction, yet it is really doable. It is really workable. It's not curable, but it's manageable when you follow all the recovery tools. You know, whether that's seeing a certified sexual addictions therapist, doing recovery reading, going to 12-step groups, getting a sponsor, doing healthy activities, you name it. There are 10 tools specifically promoted to help manage this addiction. And I have to tell you, when you work the program, it so very much works. Now, I've got Deb on the line. And, Deb, you had a specific question about sexual addiction. Is that true?
Yes. Hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm good. And thank you for calling the show. Tell me a little bit about your question.
Well, it's kind of a puzzling situation for me because I've been in recovery for sex and love addiction for the past 5 years, and I'm sober. And before that, I was, you know, also recovering from drugs, so I'm cross addicted. And you know, I've been trying to sober date. And I haven't been very successful. So, you know, I work with a sponsor, and I have sponsees myself, and I just keep falling into some patterns. You know, I feel like I can't get out of it.
Okay. So why don't you talk about one of the patterns so that we can help you with that?
Okay. Well, I've noticed that, you know, like I listen to all your podcast for the past year. I discovered you like a year ago, and I love it. So I learn a lot from it. Thank you so much. So what I heard is when one of your shows, you were talking about needs, and I think I have developed, you know, I think I didn't notice this when I was an addict, and now that I'm sober, I think I still have to work on my codependency. And I just caretake, you know, I feel it's very difficult for me to be in a relationship without caretaking the other person.
Well, absolutely, and so oftentimes addicts of anything, drugs, alcohol, sex, food, money, are codependent. So how does that codependency show up for you?
You know, like in the relationship, I start sort of like, I don't know, I think, first of all, I the type of men that are attracted to me or that I attract, I'm thinking this that I'm still maybe giving some energy to attract these type of people. So that's one of my guesses. And then, you know, I normally attract people that sort of like, you know, want my help or have a lot of, like, areas of life. I mean, I'm very, like, type A kind of person, and, you know, I'm successful at my work and all that. So I know a lot of things, and people, like, just basically, like, I attract these type of men that after a while they kind of, like, make me their higher power in certain areas of their lives, and that kind of like, and then sort of like that imbalances the relationship, and I start like focusing on, you know, teaching them or guiding them, and I kind of forget totally that this is supposed to be an equal relationship, that it's supposed to be a love relationship. I stop even wanting to be physical. I become like their mother in a way, you know. So I start feeling that I'm not interested physically anymore, and it's just like everything.
You know, Deb, I've
got
to tell you that, like I said, it is so common to become codependent in a relationship. So if I understand you correctly, you attract men who make you their god, and they don't have a good sense of boundaries, and they're certainly not working on interdependence, which obviously is right in the middle of independence or dependency. And you get caught up again and again in fixing them or making them feel normal, kind of forgetting your own needs.
Yeah, pretty much. And I feel like it's so compelling to me. I feel this is a drug for me. It's, again, it's that feeling of, like, you know, that I felt when I was taking drugs or I was having, you know, sexual compulsive behavior. It's like the same thing. I feel so compelled that I just want to, you know, even sometimes some of these men become resentful because I become, like, too, like, pushy about like, certain things. And they kind of like, well, I don't want this anymore, whatever, or I end the relationship. But I still kind of, like, even after the relationship ends, I'm still obsessing about this person needs to do this person needs to do that. If he doesn't do this, then, you know, it's just, like, I don't know how to stop this. I mean, is there anything I should be doing? I don't know.
Did you get groomed to do this early on in your childhood?
I think I did. You know, like, my value was very much performance-based, like, for my parents, you know, so.
Because here's what I would encourage you to do, and I bet you're already doing part of that. Since we've never talked, one of the things
mm-hmm.
that I know that can be helpful is obviously if you do Codependence Anonymous. And I'm
yes.
sure you've read Melody Beattie's work. I mean, she is
mm-hmm.
the guru of what is
yep.
codependency, and obviously wrote Codependence No More,
mm-hmm.
an important book on codependence. I would encourage you for the time being to write out what it is that you want in a man. What are
mm-hmm.
the deal-breaking behaviors that fall under codependency? And
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't hesitate if I were you to, you know, I would encourage you probably not to be in a relationship right now and just to keep working on yourself and your boundaries and what you want out
mm-hmm.
of life and learn how to live life without a man. But
mm-hmm.
if indeed you feel like, no, I've got a date, I've got to be with people, then I would hope that what you would do first and foremost is set limits with somebody the minute you start feeling like you have to rescue them or that you're losing your own sense of identity. I would let them know that. I would detach with love, which of course means you withdraw and you don't help them and you don't fix them. And that
mm-hmm.
would be a cue that you need to keep working on you.
Right.
And I know that would be very, very difficult for you because you've been groomed to take care of people. But truly, you really need to pay more attention to you. Now, does that sound kind of scary to be without a relationship?
No. I think I could, you know, I've been in a relationship now, but I was abstinent during, like, my first year and my first 2 years in SLI.
Very good.
So I thought I was okay already, but this kind of, like, codependency compulsion is really strong, you know. It's just,
well, and, you know, I don't want you to get discouraged because obviously you're a work in progress. And so
mm-hmm.
you're going to keep running up against the wall of a man that gets overly invested in you and you in him. And that's going to be
mm-hmm.
an opportunity for you to back off and start working on yourself. Maybe that means that,
yeah.
you know, you meet this wonderful man and all of a sudden you realize he has a drinking problem. Well, you
mm-hmm.
sit back and you take care of you and you get exercise and you do your own classes and you continue to go to your sexual addiction recovery meetings and maybe even consider doing some PMLD work and going to sex and love addiction groups because that
mm-hmm.
oftentimes ties right into that codependency.
But thank you. Yeah, I will... try to do all that. Thank you.
All right. Well, you keep me posted because anybody that listens to the show knows that they can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com or through the actual radio show, you can contact me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know that it's very, very tough. I think you're incredibly brave
to have asked the question of codependency, and I want you to check back in and let me know how you're doing, okay?
Yes, thank you so much. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Yes, codependency is a tough situation to manage, but she is one step ahead because she knows she needs to do the work, and she just has to be gentle with herself. You know, so much of this work is having that mindful understanding of what you need to do and then work with your sponsor so that you don't fall into self-defeating patterns. Now, surely, if she had been young and her parents had listened to the show, they probably would have understood that they were grooming their daughter for codependency. And that's, you know, that's what this show is all about. We're going to be talking tonight with Dr. Jeff Goodman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. Again, he wrote the book, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest, and it is aimed at parents and therapists, pediatricians, and other professionals working with children who are struggling in the wake of sexual addiction. So, Dr. Goodman, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I think this is the very first book of this kind, is it not?
Well, I think it is. I don't know of any other book that addresses sex addiction for children who are pre-pubertal. This book was designed for children to read who were between the ages of 6 and 12, whose parent or parents are struggling with sex addiction.
And would you define, in your own words, what you believe sex addiction is?
Well, I think it's a complex series of problem behaviors that are compulsive in nature, meaning that the person feels powerless and not in control of their ability to experience sexual pleasure, that their sexuality has become something that they're no longer in control of, and that their life around them, whether at work, at home, with their friends, has become unmanageable, meaning that they continue to do this kind of behavior, in spite of the consequences in the rest of their life.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Now, in what ways do you think sex addiction affects family life, and specifically young kids?
Well, it depends on the age, but I think that a common problem that I've seen in children who have one or both parents who are sex addicts is that they feel deeply ashamed of themselves and their family. They feel confused. Often the shame and the confusion can lead to isolation, feeling isolated, feeling like they're different or strange or weird. they can become secretive and closed off from their parents, whereas before they might have been more open with their parents. And a rift then occurs between them and their parents. And often in these families, you know, parents who are caught in the throes of sex addiction, spend less time interacting with their children. And, children sense that and feel the loss of their parents' affection, attention, and can feel a number of different feelings regarding that. They can feel sad about that. They can feel angry about that. They can feel anxious that their parent is not as available to them as he or she once was. And I try to cover, you know, some of these kinds of reactions that the child might have to a parent with sex addiction in this children's book that I wrote, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest.
And let me ask you, what made you title it Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest?
Well, I try to be a creative person too, and I just had the image in my mind of a father who would keep his pornography in a big chest, you know, that's secret in his bedroom that, you know, his child is not allowed to go into. And this particular child in the book is playing hide and seek, and he decides to hide from his best friend in his dad's bedroom, which he's not allowed to go into. And, you know, curiosity gets the better of him, and he opens up the chest and finds his dad's porn stash. But I just had this image of, you know, a father who is trying to hide part of who he is in this chest, and, you know, it gets exposed inadvertently. I'm sure the father didn't want his child, this boy, exposed to that material, but it happens. It happens all the time. It happens more than we care to admit as a society. So that's kind of where the book came from, and the title especially.
And what made you decide to write a book for children of sex addicts?
Well, I think children of sex addicts are an overlooked population. You know, no one really, not very many people talk about that population. Not many people pay much attention to them. And I think that based on what I've observed, the effects on this group can be devastating. And it's not all about the sex addiction. It can be about the effects of the sex addiction. You know, I think one of the worst side effects of having a sex addiction and being a parent is that it consumes so much of your time. And that's time that could be spent interacting with your child. And so, you know, when a sex addiction really takes off and, you know, gets very intense, I think that a child notices the change in the quality as well as the frequency of interactions that he or she has with the parent, and can react in you know, very negative ways. You know, it's something. Am I doing something wrong? Why is Daddy not, or Mommy not, paying as much attention to me? And also, you know, as we know, as your listeners probably are aware of, you know, what goes along with sex addiction is often a lot of marital conflict. You know, it's one parent acting out and the other parent trying to get the sex addict parent to stop doing what he or she is doing. And this marital conflict also has a devastating impact on the child, because the child is seeing the parents argue, and children are very egocentric. That is to say, they're very self-centered, and they take everything personally as if they've caused it. And I think that when two parents fight, and they fight frequently, children can often attribute the cause of the conflict or the argument to themselves. And so it's my fault that Mommy and Daddy are arguing so much. I must not be a good enough child. And they can feel angry, withdrawn, sad, anxious about that. But so there's a lot of side effects to being a sex addict and having a child that can have a devastating impact on the child that doesn't have anything to do necessarily with the actual exposure to the material. So in the children's book that I wrote, you know, this child is actually directly exposed to pornography. But as you go along in the book, you see that that's not the only thing that this kid's struggling with. He's struggling with the fact that his dad no longer plays with him. He's struggling with the fact that his mom and dad always fight. It makes him very angry. He has a nightmare about it. So it can be so it's not just the exposure that can be traumatic. It can be also what's going on around the sex addiction in the family system that can be so devastating for these children.
Well, absolutely. And so oftentimes many of the families that I work with, the kids know that there's something wrong. They've
mm-hmm.
seen pornography come up, whether it's a personal stash, whether there have been sites that have come up on the computer that they became curious about and looked through, and they know in their gut that there's something wrong, that there's something that is shameful, and they don't really know, A, how to articulate it, They don't know who really to talk to about it. They don't necessarily want to go to the other parent and ask because they don't want to cause more conflict. And so your book just does a really nice job of encouraging healthy behaviors in kids and in families. Can you talk about some of those healthy behaviors?
Sure. I think, you know, first of all, I wanted to comment on something you said, and that is that, you know, parents, I think, often make an assumption that children don't know anything. You know, children don't know what's going on. They're oblivious, they're clueless, they're too naive. You know, that kind of thinking is almost always incorrect. Children, if they don't know the whole story, they know a piece of the story, and they know something is terribly wrong. And you can often see that in their behavior, you know, a behavior change from whatever is baseline for them. If you see a change in that behavior, probably they know something is up, but they're not going to share that with you as a parent because, you know, they're feeling embarrassed and ashamed about it because they know something they're not supposed to know about, or at least that's how they feel. And so if they're not supposed to know something that they know, they're not going to share that with the parent for fear of getting in trouble with the parent. So I just wanted to emphasize that, what you already pointed out and underscored. Regarding healthy behaviors for these children, you know, it's so difficult because in these family systems, what we find is that it's so challenging for the sex addict parent to ask for help. And that's true for addictions across the board, not just sex addiction. It's so hard for addicts to admit that they're powerless over the addiction and they need help, whether either from a higher power or from other, you know, other people, from people within their family or, you know, friends or whoever, a 12-step program, you know, just reaching out for help. And so children learn from their parents, who are the role models, obviously, not to ask for help. But that's precisely what children need to do, is they need to ask for help. And, you know, often these parents are not equipped to give them help because they themselves are struggling either from sex addiction or from being so, you know, trying to control the addict's behavior that they're oblivious to and feel overwhelmed by the, you know, the problem that's going on and can't, really aren't equipped to help the child. So, you know, what parents can do is to, you know, refer the child to a professional who would be able to help this child to open up, to feel safe enough to talk about what's going on at home. You know, parents can read, give the child this book to read if they feel too ashamed and embarrassed to talk to the child directly about what's going on. So there are ways of encouraging healthy behavior, but I think the number one behavior to encourage is the ability to ask for help when you need it, that there's no shame involved in going to somebody and asking to talk about something that they don't understand or are confused about, to help them clarify their feelings and to make them feel, you know, better.
Absolutely. You know, clearly this is not a subject that every counselor is comfortable with. And I know that you're a certified sexual addictions therapist. I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist. So I would encourage our listeners to go to sexhelp.com and enter in your city, your zip code, and it will then show you people that are actually trained in sexual addictions, because I do believe that you're going to get the maximum amount of help by talking to a sexual addictions therapist. And certainly in our training, we've been taught how to talk to families and to kids about this situation. Although, I got to tell you, I think that it can be scary for even therapists, pediatricians, other kinds of professionals to bring up this topic because there is so much shame around it.
Absolutely. I think that it takes somebody who's trained in sex addiction, and you mentioned the sex addiction therapy certification. In addition, I think it would be helpful to find a therapist who, in addition to that credential, also has training in child psychotherapy and who's conducted child psychotherapy and knows how to work with children and feels comfortable working with children. So I think it's a dual level of expertise that parents need to look for. I think having just one without the other is not enough. You know, it would require someone who has skill in both areas.
Oh, yes, and I'm very glad you pointed that out, because clearly you don't talk to a young child in the same way that you would talk to a grown adult. And so that's so oftentimes where a little talk and a little play therapy, some family therapy can all be very helpful in getting a child to be able to process things as well as to work through their feelings of discontent and shame and guilt and all the other feelings that kind of emanate in a family where sexual addiction is present. You know, I'm talking with Jeff Goodman. He's a licensed clinical psychologist, certified sex addiction therapist, and professor of psychology at Long Island University. Dr. Goodman, you have been practicing for 22 years, and you've been writing and helping children understand their feelings better. It's interesting because I say to my parents, I try to simplify things, and I say, you know, kids have primarily five feelings. The first three rhyme: mad, sad, and glad, afraid, and lonely. And oftentimes, if a parent can help a child to reflect on their feelings, they can then understand a little bit better what the child may be going through. So what kinds of feelings does your book identify for children of sexual addiction, children that have parents who specifically have sexual addiction?
Well, you know, it's interesting you focus on feelings, because I think that is a key therapeutic tool for working with these kids, working with any kids really, helping them to clarify their feelings. What are they feeling? I think what that does for children is that it gives them a name for what they're experiencing in their bodies. And when you give something a name, you develop a little bit of control over whatever it is. And, you know, if you're feeling angry, if you can label it as anger, then you've developed a little bit of control over anger. You know what it is, you know how it feels, and you know what the situation is when you start feeling that feeling. It might be a tightness in the chest, it might be, you know, a pain in the stomach, whatever it might be. You know, that gives you a clue, okay, whenever I feel this, I'm feeling angry. And other people feel angry too. I'm not the only one, so I'm not alone. You know, so I think it's important for kids to, you know, be able to identify their feelings. And sure, certainly parents, if they feel up to it and not so overwhelmed, you know, they can certainly assist in facilitating that process of children, you know, being able to label their feelings. In my book, I actually make a concerted effort to identify the feelings that this child, this boy in the book, the protagonist, actually goes through in the process of, you know, discovering the porn stash of his father, you know, talking to his mother about what he discovered, hearing an argument ensuing between the mother and father, etc. You know, so, you know, I'm just flipping. I have the book in my hand, actually. I'm looking through. You know, when he finds the porn stash, he's feeling scared. So he labels it as scared. When he talks to his mom about, you know, missing his dad and not being able to do things he used to do with him as he used to, because his father's time is completely consumed by watching porn on the computer, you know, he's feeling sad about that. Then, you know, his parents begin to argue and argue and argue, and he's not feeling anything. He's tuning out. So, you know, in psychological language, we would call that a little bit of a dissociated state. He's kind of dissociated from his feelings at that point. He goes to his room, and he starts thinking about this, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, here I'm the one who's suffering, and he starts feeling mad about his situation. Then he starts hearing them arguing some more. When he goes upstairs to his bed, he's feeling scared. He goes to sleep. He has a nightmare. You know, he wakes up scared. His mom comes in to reassure him. He's starting to feel better and reassured. He's not feeling worried anymore. He talks to a therapist. He's feeling safe talking to the therapist. So feelings, I think, are emphasized all throughout the book. Later on, he starts feeling hopeful. You know, his dad decides to get into treatment, and, you know, he's feeling more hopeful that his father can actually, you know, get back to his old self, as it were, by, you know, paying more attention and playing with him.
Well, I'm glad you have the book in your hand, because clearly there will be people out there wondering, where do they pick up a book like this? I mean, is it a Barnes & Noble's Borders kind of book? Can they get it on Amazon? Do they need to go to your website? So how can people pick up the book, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest, which is written by Dr. Jack Goodman?
Yeah, they could order it through Amazon.com. Just type in the title, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest. Or they can go to the publisher, which is Tate Publishing. They sell it online there. So, and there's also an audio version of the book as well that they could purchase through Tate Publishing. So there are different media that make the content of the book available.
Excellent. You know, you mentioned such a valuable point about the kids oftentimes can't process unless somebody helps them with their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And the feelings you brought up that a child feels is also the very feelings that a parent feels. So for our addicts who are listening right now that are in recovery, they know what it's like to feel sad and angry and guilty. And, you know, so oftentimes I've talked to so many men who have said, you know, I robbed my family of so many hours of my
mm-hmm.
time and family time because the compulsion was so great that they stayed home from events, that they isolated themselves in their computer room, their office, their bedroom, wherever the internet was. And in recovery, they realized just what they ended up sacrificing with this addiction. And, of course, for addicts, it was not something that they could help until they got the awareness and learned the tools to begin to manage their sexual addiction. So we know that it's terribly, terribly difficult for anybody to resume a normal lifestyle until they're in recovery. And the guilt and shame are two very strong feelings for anybody who has lived with this addiction in the home. Now, do you think that there are unique issues that children of sex addicts experience compared to other kids?
Well, you know, it's a good question. It's one I thought about. You know, there's children of sex addicts, there are children of other kinds of addictions, and there are children of parents who don't have an addiction. So what's unique about, you know, children whose parents or one or both parents are a sex addict? You know, I think that children of sex addicts might feel that sex in and of itself is something bad or dirty or something that's out of control and chaotic. You know, if sexuality can control my father and mother to the point where they're not paying any attention to me anymore, you know, it must be an incredibly powerful thing. And that could create fear. It could create disgust over sexual issues. If the child is a girl, and let's say it's the father who's, you know, having multiple affairs with women and looks at pornography that features women, you know, how would that child who's a girl, you know, look at their own bodies? How would they grow up to think about themselves in relation to men? If the child of a sex addict is a boy, and the sex addict is the father, you know, will this boy feel fearful that he might, too, one day grow up to be like his dad and, you know, be out of control in this area that is so mysterious? and so seemingly so powerful. So I think that it might have, and there's no research on this. This is just my own observations, my own thinking about this, but I wonder whether, being a child of a sex addict might have a differential impact depending upon whether the child is a girl or a boy. And so, a parent might want to look for different kinds of signs and symptoms in a child depending upon whether the child is a girl or a boy, and also depending upon whether the parent is the father or the mother, because I've been using the example of the sex addict being the father and the mother being the often the codependent, and that's often the case, but that doesn't have to be the case at all. It could be the mother being the sex addict and the father being the codependent, or both of them being sex addicts. So we have to keep in mind that sometimes the family system or structure might not be the typical one, even among, sex addiction families, that the mother could be the sex addict and the father might be the codependent. And how would that then differentially impact the girl child and the boy child? I think we need to, begin to think about these things.
Well, absolutely. Now, I'm assuming you have had years and years and years of working with families of sexual addiction, and specifically gearing a lot of your work towards the kids.
Right. Absolutely.
So how often do you see the kids by themselves versus how often do you work within the family system?
Well, it partly has to do with my own training. I was primarily trained to work with children alone, individually, and then to see the parents collaterally, once a month or as needed. Now, there's a whole range of therapists out there, not just clinical psychologists, but marriage and family counselors who work very differently from me, and that's okay. They would meet with the family much more often than I would. I do think it's important to schedule time just with the child so the child has the ability to share what's on his or her mind with a trained professional without the parents being there, and which could, in fact, limit the safety of the child to share whatever is going on. In my book, the child meets with a psychologist and, talks about very openly about what he saw in the cedar chest and the impacts that it's had. And children don't always talk as clearly and coherently as the child in my book, but it's for illustrative purposes, what a child might be thinking and feeling, and I'm trying to communicate that in the book. But in reality, a child needs help to figure out what they are feeling and thinking and how they interpret and experience what it is that they've seen and heard, in their family system. They're not going to be as open to discussing these issues if a parent is in the room. They're going to feel inhibited, and they're going to even possibly shut down. So I do think, although different professionals work differently with children and families, I do agree that family work is indeed indicated in these situations, but also individual child work is very important and necessary so that the child has a space in which he can share, exactly what's in his little mind and heart.
And how early, how young are the youngest clients that you typically work with?
With children of sex addicts, I wouldn't see somebody under age 5 or so. Starting age 5 and 6, children are very aware of their environment and know something's up. And although, by age 6, they don't know exactly what, sex is per se, they have a sense of mommy and daddy love each other and they share a physical space with each other. They sleep in the same bed. And it's a bed that, is not open to just anybody. So they have a general sense. And I think it's important for kids that age to have somebody to talk to privately about what they've experienced in the home. And that's why I geared the book to that audience of children ages 6 to 12, because much younger than 5 or 6, you know, they might have a sense that something's not quite right, but, you know, I don't think it's helpful to share beyond, you know, mommy and daddy aren't getting along. I mean, that would be the extent of it, and to help them to understand that mommies and daddies sometimes don't get along. When they get to be 5 and 6 and 7 and so forth, then you can be a little bit more, I think, in depth about, you know, more what the problem is and what's going on. That daddy has a habit that's too hard to break. That's how I put it in the book. When the dad sits down with his son and tries to explain what's been going on with him, he says, you know, I have this habit that's just too hard to break, and I need help to help. I need help to figure out what's going on and to make it better so that I can start spending more time with you and feel better about myself. So that's something that a six-year-old could definitely understand.
Well, absolutely. It reminds me of Claudia Black and in her book that she writes for kids, My Father Loves Me, My Father Has a Disease. She talks about the fact that bees are stuck to flowers because of the honey, and she talks about how refrigerator magnets are stuck to refrigerators, and then she talks about how some people are stuck to alcohol, and that makes them sick. And when they're sick, they can't be around the family, and they need special help. And your book just does a beautiful job of not only explaining how a child thinks, but also what somebody can do to intervene. And here's what I love, is that so many of the clients that we work with, because of the secrecy, the shame, the guilt, because the kids know that they've seen something they weren't supposed to see and they don't know what to do with it, it can oftentimes create some compulsivity and some obsessiveness. And so when they get a little bit older and they go back to that same stash, that same cedar chest, that same internet, and they see more and more pornography, they then repeat that pattern of addiction. And so you working with a child and a family breaks that pattern early before it can really get reestablished. And so in lots of ways, you're teaching families how to break that generational illness, that sickness of sex addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like, you know, a wound that needs to heal, and you know, wounds heal better when they're exposed to the open air and to light. You know, the healing process works much better than if you keep it bandaged up. And I think that talking openly with children of the right age about, you know, what mommy and daddy are going through, and that you didn't cause this and that you're still loved in this family, and, you know, daddy and mommy are getting help for this, I think that takes away the power of this addiction from the children. They don't feel as though they need to repeat. You know, it's out there in the open. It's labeled for what it is. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, that labeling things, feelings, situations, themes in a family, you know, allows for the individual family member to take more control over that situation and to feel less powerless and less doomed to repeat the mistakes of the parents. You know, if a parent can sit down with a child and say, you know, I'm making a mistake here. You know, I'm not perfect, but what I am doing is I'm getting help for what I'm struggling with. You know, a child sees that and says, wow, you know, mommy and daddy can ask for help. I guess it's okay for me to ask for help, too, if I run into a problem. So I agree that it's so important for families to recognize these kinds of problems with sex addiction, and then to, you know, allow the family to heal by opening up the discussion and talking about it openly.
Absolutely. Now, you know, you talked about getting help, and obviously there are families that go to therapists and get the help they need. They go to 12-step meetings. But what would you tell parents who have kids who are experiencing the sexually addicted parent who may have to leave home to attend rehab? What kind of advice would you give that family?
Right. Well, I think that the impression is that, you know, daddy has a problem or mommy has a problem, and they have to go away to some kind of hospital or something for it. So I think the conclusion that a child might draw is that sex is bad, sex is dangerous, you know, mommy or daddy has to be locked up for it or in some kind of hospital. I think their worries is mommy or daddy going to come back from this? You know, I'm not sure. How long are they going to be gone? You know, sex rehab can be 28 days. It can be longer than that. There's some sex rehab places that can be 3 months long. Now, that's a very, very long time to be away from a child. So what's threatened here is not only the child's own view or self-perception of sexuality, but it's also the attachment relationship. You know, that relationship that is formed between a child and a parent, in which the child views the parent as somebody who makes them feel safe and secure. You know, a parent is a secure base for a child. And so when the parent goes away, that whole relationship is threatened. And so a child can feel like, I don't feel as safe. I don't feel secure anymore. My secure base has gone away, and I don't really know when they're coming back. I don't know what 3 months means versus 2 weeks. It's just a long time. That's all I know. And it can be very scary for a child. So I think the more that parents and professionals can prepare a child for that kind of separation, the better off the child will be. You know, I just having a parent just leave precipitously, whether it be leaving the home or leaving to go to rehab or whatever that might be, to do that in a precipitous, not clearly thought out manner can be very damaging to a child's sense of security in the family. And I think parents and professionals need to do the best job they can to prepare the children in that family for this departure and separation of one or, you know, of the parent.
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree. Now, let me ask you, what symptoms should a parent be looking for if they suspect that their child has discovered a parent's pornography collection, seen it on the internet, or have just seen some acting out behaviors? Well, what should parents look for?
Well, here's this interesting thing. You know, children, due to, you know, the uniqueness of who they are and the uniqueness of the sum total of their childhood experiences, you know, might have very different reactions. Some children might be very anxious and worried that they know something that the parents don't know they know. They might be very angry that the parent is doing this. They might feel very sad. They might feel confused. You know, I had a child who found his dad's porn collection, and he was so angry that he threw it out himself. So, you know, like a codependent in training almost, that he's going to control his dad's addiction by throwing out the content, the material. But anyway, you know, so there was a whole range. I think the best way of trying to identify a child who has experienced something like that would be, as I said earlier, you know, look for changes in baseline behavior. If a child is generally one way and then suddenly the next day they're acting totally out of character for themselves, whether it be very, very angry and irritable or just kind of sad and mopey or isolated, depressed, are very, very worried, biting their fingernails now where they didn't do that before. You know, those are warning signs that something is going wrong with this child and they've been exposed to something maybe that they wish they hadn't been. So it's not, you can't identify one particular feeling, but rather, you know, a change in the overall emotional state of a child from what their baseline typically is. I think that would be the best way of determining whether a child has been exposed to something like that.
Well, that's a very good point. And so those are some of the behaviors that our listeners can be attentive to. And again, I am talking with Dr. Jeff Goodman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist and a practicing certified sex addiction therapist and professor of psychology at Long Island University. He has written the book, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest, and that is a book for children of sex addicts who need to know that they're not alone in their suffering and that help is available to them. And so it's for kids ages 6 to 12, and I would highly recommend that you get to Amazon and take a look at this book, get it for your child. If you have sexual addiction in your family, I would suspect, believe it or not, I would suspect that a 14- or 15-year-old would enjoy looking at the book, if nothing else, looking back at their own life when they were younger and they first experienced these feelings. I mean, I can see it really being accessible to even a larger age group, but certainly this book is groomed for kids ages 6 to 12. And it is an uncomfortable topic. Dr. Goodman reminds us that not only should you get a certified sexual addiction therapist, but you need somebody who is skilled and trained in working with kids, because there's a special way to connect to kids that not every therapist has. And so you want to look for somebody who fits both of those criteria. As we end for tonight, you know, I want to thank you so much for this contribution. It is the only book I know of for geared to kids this age, and I mean, you're making incredible strides in the field of sexual addiction when you work with kids this young. I know that, again, I reiterate that, you know, you're breaking the chains of sexual addiction and sexually addictive behaviors, and you're certainly relieving kids of a lot of feelings that they don't understand, but they know they're feeling. They just don't know what to call that. So as we end for today, is there anything else you would like to share with our listening audience?
Well, I think just that I think there's hope. I try to end the book on a hopeful note, and you know, there are resources out there for parents and children. These families just need to avail themselves of those resources. You know, 40, 50 years ago, there really weren't any resources at all. And, you know, families just suffered in silence. And there was a lot of grief and heartache. But at least now there are a number of resources, 12-step programs, therapists who are trained in sex addiction therapy, child therapists, and family therapists who can be helpful and can really come in and intervene and, you know, make life more pleasurable and fun for these families who are really struggling and hurting.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Thanks again. Keep us posted about new writings that you may be doing in the future. And if somebody wanted to specifically get a hold of you, how might they do that?
Well, they could reach me at my email address. It's ggoodman@liu.edu, or they could call me 516-299-4277.
Got it. All right. Well, Dr. Jeff Goodman, thank you so much again, and we will keep in touch. You've been a very valuable resource tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being on your show.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was Dr. Jeff Goodman. Again, he wrote the book, Daddy's Secret Cedar Chest, and something for you to look at if you have children through the ages of 6 through 12. And I just want to thank you for listening to the show. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Know that there is hope for your sexual addiction or for your loved one with sexual addiction. And stay tuned for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach, Monday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great week.